if you had to give a shout out to the people at the wall, what would you say to them?
That I think they're so, so brave and so courageous to be doing that. No, like whatever reason that they have for doing so, I think it's so brave and something that I don't think I would have the guts for.
Hello. This is Everything's Political, and I'm your host, Junius Williams. My co-host, Francesca Larson from Mosaic Strategies. And today we're going to be talking about, is the U.S. immigration system fair to all seekers for asylum? Or we could shortcut it and say, where do you stand on the wall? And these young ladies say, well, I didn't know anything particular about a wall because both of them live here, but they have parents who did not. And so I'm going to introduce you to Leslie Lopez.
Hello.
And to Brianna Batista.
Hello.
So, Francesca, we're going to be talking about this.
Yes.
This is a timely topic because everybody in America has heard the word immigration and immigration policy at least 15 times a day. Our elected officials argue about it. Your next-door neighbor might argue about it. People walking downtown Newark, you certainly will not see who you used to see 25, 30 years ago, certainly not 50 years ago when I got here. That's why we wanted to find out what these young people think. As you know, this time we are focusing on the question, if everything's political, what do young people think? And this is certainly a politically hot topic. So how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Where do you work?
We both work at La Casa de Don Pedro in Newark. We're both senior counselors.
So that's how you got here?
Yeah. Yes.
How about you? What do you do?
I'm also a senior counselor, so it's part of the after school program where we basically we pick up kids from their respective schools and we take them to the building and we kind of we help them with their homework. We do activities with them as their parents come pick them up.
Good.
Mm-hmm. We also give them their meal. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of different departments at La Casa. Like many, there's a lot. I think there's like everything at La Casa.
Such as?
There's this other building for classes, like for English classes. There's a whole building for English classes as well as they host a lot of farmers markets, which we worked at one of the farmers markets. And I think I like the farmers market because there's a lot of, I think everyone goes there and they have activities for kids as well. It's very nice.
I'm going to start out by asking you about your parents because you both were born in the United States, correct?
Yes.
So, Brianna, where did your parents come from?
My parents came from Peru, and they came here at different times, about like 2-year difference, but they both came from Peru.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Leslie?
So my mom, my dad, and my brother were all born in Mexico. My dad moved here first, and my mom followed afterwards with my older brother.
Why did your parents come here?
My mom, her reasons were, for her top reason is always saying that she came for her mom because her family was very poor. And in Peru at the time, in the 80s, there was a lot of terrorism. So it wasn't safe in Peru. Food was scarce. People had to make lines for food. And there were times where you would make the line and then you wouldn't get any food. Just stuff like that. She was always scared of living there, so she came here. And my dad, because of the terrorism, what could take 2 years for him to finish school, it was already 7 years, and he had still many years to go since he always had to cancel class. Since class was always canceled and the terrorist group would go into their classrooms. So that was also, that was his reason why also he came to America.
So how hard was it to get here?
There, when they tell me their stories, it, I sometimes can't believe, because when I see my mom, she's very nervous and anxious that, like bugs will scare her. So whenever she would tell me her story of how she came, what she went through, I sometimes can't believe, like, that she was able to go through all of that. And my dad as well, their stories, that's taken, it took them so long to get here. And they've gone through so many, so much like violence when they were coming.
When did they start telling you the story? When did you, how old were you when you fully started to understand?
When, well, growing up when I was little, everyone around me, they were Hispanic. Mm. So I never really thought about like how they came here. I kind of just, everyone was Hispanic around me. So I never questioned it until I went to school and I like realized that some kids, their parents aren't immigrants. So I asked my parents how they came here, and they didn't tell me their whole story at first. When I got older is when they started to tell me more, but they started off by telling me that they weren't from here.
Mm-hmm. And where are you in school?
I go to Rutgers University. I'm a sophomore.
What are you going to be when you quote unquote grow up?
I hope I'll be living lavish with my dogs and having dinner parties with my friends and have an impact and be able to help my family.
What kind of food are you serving at these dinner parties?
Oh, I don't know. Like Thanksgiving parties. Ooh. Or Christmas parties. Just everyone brings whatever they want to bring, or I'll just make whatever they want me to make.
What about you, Leslie? What's your parents' story?
My parents, they're really sensitive about the topic, so they haven't really fully opened up to me about it. Mm. But from what they've told me, they didn't really live in a very rich neighborhood. They lived a little bit in a poorer neighborhood. So, like, food and, like, income, like, it was very low for them. And my parents had my brother at a very young age. My mom was just 18 when she had him. So it was more difficult for her because she had to leave school and she didn't have as much help to help raise my brother. So my dad, he wanted a better future for my brother. He wanted him to grow up to be something more than he could himself be. He didn't want him to live a life like that. So that's why he decided to move here. And then originally he wanted to move here and earn money so he could send back to them. But my mom, she didn't like that. So she was like, no, I'm going to go with you. So she packed her bags. She took my brother and she moved here to follow him. And yeah.
I feel like that's a very common story and a common challenge of does a family stay together as they immigrate to find more opportunities or more stability? Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that your mom made the decision to come. It sounds like that might be probably something that's carried through in who you are as well.
She's very courageous. Mm. I admire her for that.
Sounds like my grandmother on my father's side.
Oh, really?
Family's from Danville, Virginia. Mm. And things were hard for Black people in Danville, Virginia. Well, things were hard for Black people all over, still are, but especially at that time. And she told my grandfather, I'm going to New Jersey. And he said, well, I don't want to go to New Jersey. She said, well, do you go or not? I'm going to New Jersey. Well, he eventually came to New Jersey, and they lived in Atlantic City, a step up for everybody, I believe. That's where my father grew up. I asked you about this program called DACA, which was made for young people whose parents came illegally, but they've been here for most of their lives, or just about all of their lives. And so there was a window and an opportunity for them to get there. But as I found, and I keep reaching down here for this paper because I want to get the right title on it, There was an article in the LA Times that I went over with you. Immigration policies leave lives in limbo. And from that news article, what did you discover? And is there some application that you know about?
I knew about it. When I read the article, I thought it was so unfortunate that they were twin sisters, how one sister was able to, you know, be a part of DACA, and then the other sister wasn't, unfortunately, being able to. Even if she sent the application one day afterwards, like, that's so unfortunate. Like, that would break my heart. Like, just one day. Like, you were so close, yet, like, you don't get the opportunities that your sister does. I thought it was so sad. Like, her sister was able to have a life that she could have also had, but she wasn't able to. And I just think it's so unfortunate for the other sister.
What are you missing out on if you don't get that piece of paper that says you're documented?
I think you lose a lot of opportunities, like education, work. I think with DACA, let's say you want to go to a better college, a lot of people, they don't have the money to go to these college. And so some of the scholarships that are available, they're not available to people who don't have that kind of protection. So they lose out on a lot of opportunities and offers that other kids their age have. So I think that's one thing as well.
So you mean that if you come here with your parents and you're 2 years old and you only know America,
mm-hmm.
you can't get the opportunities that America offers? Is that what they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're nodding your head?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, just that one piece of paper makes such a difference, and they both come from the same household, yet only one of them got all the benefits, and the other is still struggling.
She couldn't get a job.
Mm-hmm.
All the jobs that she gets are kind of low paying, maybe even under the table, cash instead of a check, no social security number.
Mm-hmm.
What is always interesting to me in these moments is we're talking about paper and paper that is needed to define personhood, it seems, that in order to be a person, in order to be seen as a full person, you have to have this piece of paper. And I think about my family and the different stories of immigration and also how folks came to the U.S. under force, that personhood is still very much part of that story. Is at what point do we start to see everybody as people?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, as you all think about immigration, especially as folks who are, I will admit, a little bit younger than I am. I used to be the young person in the room. I am no longer the young person in the room. We don't have the same kind of geography boundaries anymore. You can message and call somebody anywhere in the world at any point in time, but all of a sudden you cross the border, you find a way around a wall, and now we have these very clear boundaries of these are the opportunities you have while you're here.
Mm-hmm.
What do y'all think about that? What do you think about this idea that your rights, your opportunities change depending on where you live in the world or what paper you have? Does that make us less of people? Is it right? What do you think the future looks like there?
I think that it's sad that just a piece of paper has so much meaning or just has so much respect while a person doesn't have that same respect. And it's just, whenever I think about other people who don't have their papers, it's like there's a lot of, I forgot how to say it, like the...
Say it how it feels right, and then we can figure it out.
Okay. That I just think it's crazy how paper has so much meaning. That one paper, that's, I don't know how much to say.
Yeah, it is interesting because, like, do you have more power? Are you more of a person here if you have that paper versus somebody else? I don't know. Does it, from your experience and being in spaces where folks are documented, some folks are documented and some folks aren't documented, does it feel like the opportunities aren't the same? Or does it feel like the folks kind of see that difference between folks?
I think people can definitely see the difference. Someone can have so much more knowledge, yet that paper holds them to a disadvantage. And someone else who, let's say, was born here, just has their papers, they don't have the same, they just have more advantages than other people, even though everyone is still very intelligent and everyone has that ambition to do something great.
Well, we're talking about unfairness because apparently some people don't have as much trouble getting that paper. It depends upon where they come from in the world. And there was a poll in that LA Times article that we've been referring to, and the poll taken showed that only a few people who were of Latino descent thought that the immigration policy was fair for those seeking asylum, but 90% of the Europeans think it's fair. Have you detected a difference in the policy of who gets in and who can't come in?
I think the process of coming to America is a lot harder now. Like, in one of the articles, it was saying how, like, almost, I think, 1% of people that come in, like, are able to come in. Mm-hmm. I think that's unbelievable that only 1% of people were able to come in.
But it seems that people from Europe are much more represented in that 1%, if that's the figure that it is, as opposed to people who come from south of the American border. What's up with that? Is that a story to be told?
Well, I know from when my family and from when I go to see my family in Peru, I've been to Peru and I've also been to Spain, and the difference there, when I go to Peru, it's a lot more unsafe than it is in Spain. So I think that maybe in Europe, they don't see how dangerous it is. Like, it's not the same level of danger as it is in South America or Central America. In Europe, I felt a lot safer than how I know other families are in Central America or South America.
Your parents, I think you told me your mother, has her own business.
Yeah.
How did she become a businesswoman?
When she would always tell me that the desperation was so strong, that was her biggest drive, and also always thinking of her mom and her two nephews back in Peru. When she came, she started working two jobs, and one of them being at a nail salon, and she eventually was getting more customers, and then she had my brother. And after she had my brother, my parents were like, oh, we should do something more, like, because the money that they had wasn't enough. So then my mom opened her own business, and I basically grew up in that nail salon, and everyone in that nail salon, they were also immigrants. So I grew up with them and their children as well.
So your mother now has her own nail salon business.
Yeah, she's had the nail salon, I think, 27 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how you find a way to talk about who you are and your identity in a way that feels right for you without also sharing everything about your family, too.
I try to talk more about the qualities that I have that my parents gave me, not as much as what we've gone through, which also, like, what we've gone through is a big part of who I am. But
yeah,
I mostly talk about the qualities and things I've learned from my mom, my dad, my aunts, who were big role models in my life growing up. I usually talk about that.
What are some of those qualities, do you think?
Well, I grew up with mostly women.
Oh, love that.
Yeah.
The nail salon.
Yeah, in the nail salon.
Such a great spot.
I just grew up with mostly women. So I think the biggest thing they gave me was confidence and to always recognize who I am, not... Mm-hmm. I think growing up, like my brothers, they didn't have the same... Like, if we were to talk about it, I think my brothers would say, oh, like, my dad, the influence that he had on them was not the same as what my aunts and my grandma and my mom had with me.
The confidence that you're talking about. And also, it sounds like within the salon, maybe a sense of community that was built. And when you were talking about how where you grew up, that... It felt like a community. It didn't feel like anybody was different until you went to school.
Yeah, when I went to school, that's when I realized that it's a lot different, mostly because of teachers and not as much the students.
What were, and I'm sorry, I'm curious about what the teachers said.
Well, my teachers and like the faculty were not immigrants, but the students, mostly all the students were first generation, and a few of them were probably immigrants as well. So that, I feel like sometimes it felt like they had some kind of power over us, not power, but maybe they had a stereotype, which was sad because we were so little and we were in school, like we didn't know any better.
Yeah, that maybe the stigma that's surrounding and the stereotypes that are surrounding our conversations about immigration right now in this country are impacting kids in a classroom and the way that teachers view them, and going back to that conversation of who gets to be real people, who gets to be full people. I think about that with my kids all the time, too. I'm sorry, Junius.
There's another topic that we talked about a little earlier. And this comes from two articles in the New York Times, immigration families separated at the border. In some cases, this one case, this lady had her child and she got the child back. And I'm not so sure about the second one, but talk a little bit about that. Leslie, let's start with you.
Do you want me to tell like what happened to them?
Well, you can go over the facts in the case.
Okay.
Do you guys know that Junius is also a lawyer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little research. So basically, this mother, she lived in Honduras, I believe, right? And she was living with her, I think it was two children. And she had she was pregnant during the time. And there is these gangs that were coming to her house in her neighborhood, basically threatening her, telling her, like, you either leave tomorrow or you'll see what will happen. Mm-hmm. And she knows the kinds of, like, she knows that if she's there in the house by tomorrow, she knows what would happen to her. So she, like, I packed her bags, everything that she owned. She only had around $80 in her name. So her husband and her kids, they left. And while I think they were in Mexico, they were in Puebla. They were on this, I think it was this train, and these immigration officers, they came in and they noticed that they came in. So the mother and her children, they kind of hid behind a bush while the dad and the newborn child, she had the baby, so the newborn child, she saw them running away in the opposite direction. And so at that point, she didn't know what happened to them. So when she was at the border, I believe, they were kind of rejecting her, telling her, like, no, you can't come in, or this and that. And when she asked, like, oh, when can I see my daughter? Like, I want to know, like, who's taking care of her? Like, is she okay? I mean, they kind of were, like, saying, like, you can see her in a few months. You just had to fill out these forms, kind of dismissing her. And it wasn't after a while that she was like, okay, I have to do something, like, so I think she threatened to go to the press to talk about it until they finally agreed to let her see her baby. And so what happened to the father that was that he was originally deported from the United States. Mm-hmm. And since he was trying to go back a second time, they had to send him to jail. And so they ripped the child away from his arms and took her to like a shelter while the dad went to jail. And the mother said that when she finally was able to see her child, like it was a hard time because she looked malnourished. Mm-hmm. She had lice in her hair and everything. Like she just didn't look like she was properly treated. And she said that it took a while for her to connect with her again because she was ripped away from her for such a young age that she didn't even recognize her. And that she would be screaming for her dad like every night when she had her. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it kind of got to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was reading it, I was like, wow, like that's so sad. Like having a piece of you taken away from you, like mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what she was going through, especially since she had like two other kids that she had to take care of. I could only imagine she had to be strong enough for those kids.
People don't see that. Because the news only flashes on numbers, and there's all kinds of stories about who's coming across the border, as mm-hmm. told by folks like ex-President Trump, the human side of immigration. Why are people coming here?
Well, they're coming here because it's so unsafe in back in their home country, and because of money. They don't have money. And the danger of most countries have gangs, that danger that like when they're so desperate to because of that, they don't have that safety, they want to come here.
Do you think that United States policy towards XYZ country has something to do with that? All the money that goes for guns, let's say to Honduras, or to Mexico, supposedly to engage in a war on drugs. Do you think all of that has something to do with how people are treated and why they want to leave?
Well, it just promotes more violence. There more money for guns, more money for drugs. It's just that would make the country even more unsafe.
I agree. I think funding these kinds of like weapons and drugs, it just creates a toxic environment. And I think it helps promote why people are starting to immigrate here, or it just makes it unsafe for them in their own countries.
Both of you are United States citizens. Mm-hmm. You got the paper.
Yeah.
But how do people treat you?
Sometimes they have a stereotype or they just second guess. I remember once I was in school and they would confuse me with ESL. Like one person confused me with an ESL kid.
And tell us what ESL
is. ESL is a program that I think all schools have for students who don't speak English, mm-hmm. English second language. So that's where they learn to speak English, or they take their courses with someone who speaks Spanish. I remember I would hear stuff about the ESL kids, like other students whose parents weren't immigrants. They would always have a stereotype towards ESL students. And I remember I heard once something about how, it was always during lunchtime that they would say stuff about ESL kids. And I just thought it wasn't fair because we all go to the same school. It wasn't necessary for them to say stuff.
I think growing up, I didn't really see how much my ethnicity or my skin color affects me. Because I grew up in a very predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. So everybody around me was just like me, looked just like me. And my family never really talked to me about those kinds of things. So I never really noticed how much it affects me as a person. It wasn't until I got to high school that I realized, like, oh, wow, like, I am different, and not in a bad way, but in a good, like, I'm different, obviously. My...
And we're talking about Kearney High School, right?
Yeah,
Kearney High School.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
My mom told me something when I was in high school that I didn't even notice. So before I moved to New Jersey, I lived in Pennsylvania for 2 years. I moved like halfway into third grade and my whole fourth grade. My brother, he went to high school at that time. And in Pennsylvania, like, there wasn't a lot of like Hispanic people who lived there. Mm-hmm. It was more predominantly white. So my mother told me that during that time that we lived there, my brother was having a very difficult time settling in and adapting to that environment, and that he would get into constant fights with other kids because they would bully him about where he came from, like his skin color, how he looked. And I didn't realize how much it affected my brother compared to me. I thought it was like, I was like, wow, like I didn't even know that. Like, and I realize now how big these stereotypes that are put onto us and other people of ethnicities and colors, skin tone, how much it affects them and how it's still relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is it only white people who have these stereotypes, or what's your relationship with black people at Rutgers, at Kearney, or what's your history been?
Well, in Kearney, it was mostly Hispanic people there. And in Newark, my relationship that I have with black
people. So I was just wondering about your personal relationships. Has that been colored by the fact that your parents are immigrants and probably people think you are too?
I don't think, it was, sometimes it was even Hispanic people that had something to say as well, which is funny because their parents are immigrants, or it would be, like, their child that would say something, but I would just think, oh, like, they don't, like, why would they say that even though their parents are immigrants? So I don't think it really, was a specific community. It was just what they believed in.
One more question, Francesca. What do you got for him?
Oh, I get one more question?
You do, and then I got one.
All right. So we've talked about a couple of different things, about being full people, about the way that we tell the stories of our families. And so as you think about what does it look like to throw lavish dinner parties, and I don't know what are you looking forward to in the future, and then I'll ask a question, but I don't know what it is. You didn't get a chance to share.
I hope to have a successful career and make something out of myself, so I can hopefully make my parents proud and show that their sacrifices that they made were worth it. That's what I hope to do.
Well, my follow-up question was going to be, what's the story that you want to be able to tell about your families and immigrants? Anything else that you want to be able to share in the future, the story that you would want to tell your potential friends or kids or extended family in the future about what does it mean to be from an immigrant family in the U.S. What the power of that is?
I think that coming as a first generation person, I think that it's a big struggle, because thankfully I had my older brother who was able to help me with like education and stuff. Like, he was able to like tell me like, oh, you should do this, you should do that to help yourself. But I think a lot of kids don't have that kind of role model. And I think it's harder for people, like, they don't know the opportunities that they're able to get. Like, it's something that you have to search for.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that what I tell my kids.
I don't want to put having kids on you, so that's your choice.
that they should be proud that, or they should be, how should I say this? that the things that they have, mm-hmm. they should be proud and they should be, what's the word? Like, they should be happy that they have these privileges mm-hmm. and that they're able to do something with it, because other kids, they don't have the kind of things that they have.
Yeah.
So let me ask you another way. Do you think you have a future?
Yes, I do.
What do you think it's going to be?
What my future is going to be, I think I just see calmness, like a calm life, peace, and just not very loud life. I don't know. I just hope it's a lot of peace in my future, not fighting or feeling bad about myself.
Both of you, if you had to give a shout out to the people at the wall in Texas/Mexico, what would you say to them?
That I think they're so, so brave and so courageous to be doing that. No, like whatever reason that they have for doing so, I think it's so brave and something that I don't think I would have the guts for, like just dropping everything behind you and just trying to get into this new place, a new better place for you and for your family. I think it's so brave of them to be able to do that and go, especially if they're first, like they don't know any English. I feel like just by not knowing any English, you already have this like stereotype put onto you. So I think it's very brave of them to do that.
I would say don't give up. You'll make it here. There's a lot of inspirational immigrants here. I think every immigrant parent here is inspirational. And whenever they feel bad, or my parents, they would tell me whenever they would feel bad or just like they were going through a hard time, they would just remember that. They would remember like their challenge that they went through and the difference of how they're living and how they would have been living if they stayed back at home. So I think they're very brave.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We enjoyed you.
Thank you.
You're going to be able to see this like everybody else on YouTube and on Spotify. And we'll talk to you the next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everything's Political Podcast is sponsored by the Center for Education and Juvenile Justice and supported by the Terrell Foundation and the Robert Woods Johnson Foundation and listeners like you. It is produced by Mosaic Strategies and Dream Play Media with theme music by Anthony Ant Jackson. Like what you see and hear? Then subscribe to Everything's Political Podcast on Spotify, YouTube. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Go ahead, push the red button. Thank you. See you next time, and remember to stay political.